Accession number 18832, Reel 2.
Harold Kamak, Reel 2.
Yes, we had to hold this high ground because the Panzers were making determined efforts to throw us off this ground, and if they'd succeeded, then they'd have had access to either visual or go to down to the beach to, well, just to start to, I was going to say annihilate, but it could have been very, very nasty for the seaborne forces coming in, and they could have been thrown back into the sea, which would have been a disaster.
Can you describe the first serious German assault that you had to cope with?
Yes, we were just south of Romville to a place called Longyville, and again that was high ground, and we had to again attack Longyville village, and that's when we first came under the attack from these Panzers. And we, as a parachute regiment, don't carry heavy armaments. We had light machine guns, anti-personnel mines, PIAT, what they call PIAT guns, which were fired a small bomb, which were quite effective against certain vehicles, but unfortunately against some of the tanks which were being deployed at the time, they weren't very effective actually, not against those tanks. But we had just had to make the best of what we had. And on occasion we just had to run forward, and we had what they call sticky bombs, run forward and try and stick them onto the tracks of the tanks, then make a sudden vanish out the way and hope it's going to knock the tank tracks off. But the Germans got wise to that actually in the finish. They just used to open the turrets and with their submachine guns, etc., and inflict quite a lot of casualties on our chaps at times. But we hung on until the seaborne chaps came in, who were comprised of some commandos who relieved us. Actually, they came over the Pegasus Bridge and relieved us with Lord Lovett.
Did you personally attack a tank with a sticky bomb?
Yes, I did actually, yes.
Can you describe the incident?
Yes, we were laid against this wall, a few of us, myself and a chap, two chaps, one called Benbow and a Lance Corporal Northrop. And we saw the tank coming around the corner, and we couldn't avoid it actually, because he would have spotted us. So we did the only thing what we thought we could do was all three of us dash forward. No, as you were, one of them gave us covering fire with a Bren gun, and the two of us run forward and slammed the sticky bombs onto the track. But unfortunately, it didn't disable the track, but it caused him to back off. And it gave our platoon time to again regroup.
So the sticky bombs went off?
Yes, they went off, though, yeah, but they didn't disable the tracks at all, didn't knock it off.
What kind of a tank was this?
Oh, not sure. It was either, we think at the time, we thought it was a Tiger tank, but it wasn't. We think it was a Panther, and they call them Panther. We think it was a Panther. It was still a very, very formidable machine. There's no doubt about that, because they did have some, their equipment were first class. There's no doubt about that.
Any other incidents that you recollect from that fighting?
No, not, Well, not in that particular incident. No, as regards that particular attack at Longyearbyen, no.
And that tank was actually in the village, was it?
That was just, well, just adjacent to the village. The village was only maybe 400 or 500 yards away. It was on the outskirts.
And then, did you see the commandos come in?
Then, yes, then the commandos came over the bridge with Lord Lovett and his commandos. And Lord Lovett's personal piper. We heard the pipes initially, and he came over with his pipe, personal piper, and they relieved us.
Did you give them any particular welcome?
Yes, we just, well, as much as possibly could, like, you know, just thankful, like, and grateful that good on your lads and things like this.
And then what?
Well, then we, the actual fighting just eased off for just a short period, maybe 24 hours or so, like a lull in the fighting. But then the Scottish regiment, they had to attack a place not far off Longyearbyen, a place called Breville, which was, as we described, a thorn in the side of our people. And Breville had to be taken, there's no doubt about that, because of the situation. And the centre Scottish regiment who came over the bridge with the commandos to attack it, and unfortunately they got driven back with substantial losses. And the 12th Battalion, we were being held in reserve. We weren't many strong, about 180 odd left actually, round about there. And we got orders to, if we only had a parachute battalion reserve, and they sent us with some Royal Ulster Rifle glider people to attack Breville in the early hours of the morning, and it had to be taken at all costs. And Breville itself was the highest point, and we got covering fire from our own, from some of the Navy ships as well. But some of them lost, some of the shells fell short, and it was unfortunately they fell short and they hit part of our battalion, and our Colonel Johnson and two or three more officers and men were killed by our own friendly fire.
Did it come anywhere near you personally?
Well, again, Within 100 or 200 yards, it was either side, like, you know. Colonel was in the middle directing. We heard the shells coming over, but they fell short. And Colonel Johnson and two or three more officers were killed, and quite a few men, by our own fire. That does happen in warfare, unfortunately, on occasions. And we had one of our old colonels, called him Parker. And Colonel Parker was in the Air Landing Brigade, and so, as he found out what had happened, he came down from being an observer and took over the battalion, and he conducted the rest of our attack onto Breville. And it was pretty horrendous, actually, with Breville itself. There was only about 80 of us, less than 80 of us came back. I was wounded at Breville.
How did that happen?
Well, Breville itself was under this arch, like an archway, and...
An archway?
And like a, it was an arch, as I recall, of a building, going in like a courtyard. And we had to go across the courtyard to get a further advantage to our positions, going up the hill to Breville, in Breville itself. And as we crossed, a few of us crossed the road to take a different position, either a mortar shell or whatever it was landed on the road a few yards from us. And it blew me practically back over the archway, and I got badly wounded in the right leg. And that paid to me for until I came back. About a month or 6 weeks, maybe 2 months later.
What damage did it do to your leg?
It damaged part of the bone on my right leg, chipped it, and left me with considerable scarring.
So these were mortar shell splinters?
Like a shrapnel, I would say.
Can you tell me about the treatment that you got and how you got back home?
Yes.
And what was the date of the wounding?
That was on the 13th of June.
How did they get you back home?
Well, when it initially happened, I didn't know where the devil I was at the time. It killed two of them. The chaps who was with me, they were killed outright by the same barrage. And again, it was a commando who was supporting us who came across the road and dragged me undercover. And he just put a heavy field dressing around my leg. And then a lot of the wounded were round about the area and were all together, including German wounded, by the way, as well. And then they were there for maybe not quite 2 days. And then when Brevel itself was took, they moved us down to the beach. They either walking wounded or I was on a stretcher. And they took us back to England, to Chichester.
How much pain were you in?
Oh, quite a lot, actually. Quite a lot. It was the actual wound itself, but a lot of it was shock. Quite a lot.
Where did you go to in England?
To Chichester.
To a hospital?
Yeah, it was a military hospital.
What kind of treatment did you get there?
They just kept dressing after dressing each day with penicillin gauzes and things like this, which is part of the healing.
Did you have any complaints about the medical treatment that you got?
No, everything was first class.
Did you make a full recovery from that?
Yes, I did. But it was still giving me a lot. It still does now, actually, at times. It aches quite a lot in bad weather.
You mean cold weather?
The cold weather, yes. The cold, it gives you... gnarls away. Quite a bit of the tissue was taken away, you see. But after I'd recovered, I just rejoined the battalion down at Lark Hill again, because the battalion came back, you see.
So this is about August, isn't it?
September time, I would say, yeah, August, September.
What was the state of the battalion by the time you joined it?
Well, it was, I hardly knew actually anyone, it would be, because we were suffering a lot of casualties. They came back and they just regrouped and waiting for other chaps to rejoin the battalion. Just to make us up to full strength again, you see. And those what came back, some of us got promoted, and I was promoted sergeant. And then I had my own section, you see. And then after that, the Ardennes came along then. Then the division was sent to the Ardennes when the... Von Rundstedt was having his push in the Ardennes. And they sent our division over to assist stopping the assault through the Ardennes.
Which division was that?
That was the 6th Division, 6th Airborne Division, of which we were part of.
Can you tell me about the journey to the Ardennes, please?
The Ardennes, yes. We were all getting ready for Christmas, actually. Putting trimmers up in the messes and things like that, and then they said, sorry, there'll be a what they call an FSMO, a field service marching order, checking all your equipment. And we knew there was something going off. And that was about December the, middle of December maybe. And then they shot us off in troop carriers across to the Ardennes itself. I'm trying to think where they landed actually. They shot us off to I think it was Ostend we went to. I'm not quite sure on that one. And then went into a truck carrying vehicles up to take our positions up around a place called Namur, and we held our positions there. Then went to Bruges as well.
Were you under attack at Namur?
Yes, we were actually. Namur was quite nasty as well, because it was the winter conditions were very, very bad. Very bad. And again, we was coming under attack from these Tiger tanks who were holding that position at that time.
Were you in the town or in the countryside?
No, in the town itself. In Namur town itself. There was a fair amount of street fighting going off as well in that particular town.
Did you take part in the street fighting?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what that was like?
Well, street fighting is very nasty. It's not like an ordinary attack. You mean you're entering a building and you just don't know what to expect. Because we attack one building, and I personally got halfway up these stairs, and it was a German Panzer Grenadiers. One of these came up the top of the stairs. They were holding the building, and I was halfway up these stairs. And for some unknown reason, he definitely could have shot me. I know that. For some unknown reason, he just looked down, smiled, did a smart about turn, and shot off down the other side of the house outside. And why, it puzzles me to this day why, but I just don't know on that one.
Did you catch up with him and the others?
Well, not us personally, but there was lots of gunfire going off around the back of the building, so we assumed they were either being shot or taken prisoner.
How long were you doing the house-to-house fighting for?
Oh, 4 or 5 days.
And was it German infantry you were up against?
Both. It was the tanks and the infantry. We had a glider unit attached to us, the Oxford and Buckinghamshire, and they had an ambulance coming down the street of Namur, and they went head on with this Tiger tank. But we was all doing our own bit, we could see, because they were picking their wounded up, was these our lads. And the Tiger tank commander just opened his turret, and he just looked at the ambulance driver. He said, "I'll give you half an hour to get your wounded out of that house and don't come back." That was off. We all remember that. Perfect English. Because his sound was carrying, you know, perfect English. He said, "I'll give you half an hour to get you all out of that house." He says, "And don't come back anymore." Which they did. They got what they could out. And the Tiger tank just backed off and started pumping shells again all over the place. It was strange. Like, quite a lot of the Germans, they weren't all Nazis. It was just quite a lot were just guys doing their job.
Do you think a British tank commander would have done the same thing?
Difficult to say. I would say yes.
W- Was there much destruction of the houses in Namur?
Yes, in Namur itself, it was just flat. It was just gone. It was just derelict buildings and, well, you name it. It was just no, there was just nothing. There was no civilians there. They just gone. But Namur, again, you see, was a vital spot to be taken. It had to be taken. And so this is what it was all about.
Were there many casualties to your unit in Namur?
To the 12th Battalion, maybe about 20%. But the 13th Battalion, which is part of our brigade, it had been their job to take Namur, but they'd come under very, very heavy fire from these tanks, and they lost quite a lot of men. And that's when they sent our battalion up to assist them.
And you were a sergeant?
Mm-hmm.
With a section?
Yes, I had three section.
And which platoon was it then?
That was 4 platoon.
Did you lose anybody from the section?
Yes, I lost 3 guys from my section, yeah.
How did that happen?
Through shell fire. It was through shell fire. One of them with this German had a MG-42 positioned on the corner of the street, and the MG-42 was a very fearsome automatic weapon that the Germans possessed. And we came under fire, and he got killed with that, unfortunately.
Where was that?
That was in Namur.
Do you remember the names of any streets?
Streets? No. It was just another place, you know.
After how long in the fighting had those casualties occurred?
Maybe 5 or 6 hours, round about there, I would think. That's a rough guess. It's hard to say. It's a long ago, like, you know.
What was the weather like when you were fighting?
Terrible. The weather was, in that winter of 44, it really was terrible. Because after that, they sent us up into Holland, onto the River Maas. And we were doing lots of patrol work there. And that's all you could do, patrol work. But across the River Maas, you could hear the Germans on the other side talking. It was that clear. And they were trying to keep warm, I suppose, same as what we were. And they were doing patrols, and we were sent out now and again to do a patrol and fetch, if you can find a prisoner, fetch one back for interrogation and things like that.
Going back to the Ardennes, were you in any fighting anywhere else apart from the streets of Namur?
Yeah, a place called Bure, B-U-R-E. Again, it was a similar situation to Namur.
Street fighting?
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference between fighting in the two places?
None, really. It was practically the same. Where I would think that Bure was maybe, if anything, slightly more hectic. As far as our battalion was concerned.
Why was it more hectic?
Well, there was a little bit more opposition, put it that way.
Did you lose men there in your section?
So I'm seeing if I think. We had a couple of casualty wounded, but I don't know. I didn't have any killed in that section, but I had a couple of wounded. Because on occasions, if your section got depleted, they gave you transferred another few guys from a section or a company who hadn't had so many casualties, and they could, you know, things like they did things like this.
What did you think of the caliber of the German enemy in the Ardennes?
Good. They were good soldiers. There's no denying that. Especially the tank crews, the Panzer Grenadiers, and people like that. They were first class soldiers. There's no doubt about it. There was initially we were when we first dropped, we were came up against some German Pioneer Corps people. Nothing wrong with them; they did a good job because we had Pioneer Corps people to do the spade work, shall we say. And we didn't have a lot of difficulty containing them. But then a couple of days after that, we came under very heavy fire. And we knew there was something wrong. And we had to go out and see if we can get a prisoner, which we did. And we found out he was from this Panzergrenadier unit. And we knew very well then that we were in for a bit of a hard time.
How did you get the prisoner?
Well, you just stalked them, actually. You just stalked them and wait while the opportunity arises by stealth. And if you see, we had to lay for 3 or 4 hours undetected until we saw one moving out, maybe going to relieve himself, and that's actually how we got one.
Did you do this yourself?
No, not me personally. And there were three or four of us. We overpowered the guy and did the necessary to get him back. Had to knock him out.
But you were one of them.
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Had to knock him out, and then took him back to HQ. And Major Rogers, he said, "Well, no, Major Rogers, sorry, I'd got killed at Breville. We had this other, can't think of his name, this other major, Freeguard. I think they called him Freeguard, and handed over to him. We didn't see him anymore then, because we all had a German interrogator, spoke fluent German." And interrogating him, like, you know, how come we didn't see him again then? So what information they got from him, or if any, I just don't know.
So he was captured at Bure?
That was at Bure. Mm-hmm.
Then you were telling me about the winter on the Mars.
Yes, the winter on the Mars, we did nearly all patrol work there. Because the winter was very, very severe. We're doing patrol work, some skirmishing between their patrols and ours. And then they brought us back. They brought us back to UK, the division, in preparation to the Rhine crossing. Then we came back in February. We came back February time. And then we just did some more training and regrouped for the jump over the Rhine. That was in March.
Can you take me through that in March detail? 40,
March,
step by step,
in March 45, yes. We knew it was going to be the last massive airborne operation of the war. And the 6th Division, in conjunction with the 2 American airborne divisions, again, we had to jump over the Rhine at a place called Wesel, W-E-S-E-L, Wesel. Again, it was only a small village. And we had to take Wesel and all around that area, again, for the seaborne troops landing craft coming over the Rhine. So they wouldn't have such a difficult task. But normally the parachute regiment drops, parachute regiment, and then the gliders come in after, but over the Rhine, the powers that be decided all at once. So as we was dropping, there was gliders flying all over the place.